For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Welcome to episode number 200 of MSR Cast, your metal podcast. What better way to start things off than some uniting of some pumpkins here?
Yeah.
I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie the Metal Geek, along with
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
Happy 200, my friend.
Yeah, happy 200. I know we had grand plans for the 200th, like a long time ago.
We did.
Pre-Hurricane Harvey. And now we just sort of realized, you know, we just need to get moving on all these episodes. So
I am celebrating with some...
We did have drinks tonight.
We did have some drinks.
Yeah, I'm celebrating
a little bit. And we just heard something brand new from one of my favorite bands of all time.
This is worth celebrating. The reunion of something that we never thought would happen. Certainly not in the power metal
world.
I don't even think these guys were talking for like 15 years.
Right. I mean, some of them are still not talking,
they wouldn't even talk to each other about each other in interviews. So,
right.
I gotta say that was as good. I was saying this, but that was as fun and as good as a combined reunion single as we could have hoped for, you know?
Of course we're talking about Helloween. They put out a reunion, single called Pumpkins United for their brand new tour that they're doing, which of course features not only Andy Darris on vocals, but who else?
Michael Kiske.
And who else is playing on this song?
Kai Hansen. Yeah.
They got the band back together, as you say. It's pretty awesome. As you said, some of the lyrics can be a little cheesy because they're...
It was definitely like a self-reference.
Yeah, they're calling back to other song titles in this song, but it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I don't care what they say.
Very in the vein of something you would imagine could be on Keeper or something, you know?
Oh, yeah. So, I'm definitely... Yeah. I'm going to get like the 7-inch of this
because
it looks like the Helloween pumpkin.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, cool. Helloween is one of the very first power metal bands that I ever heard.
Some would argue they're the first power metal band.
Could
be argued.
I remember going into, this is a very specific memory, West Oaks Mall. Back, we used to go to the mall with my mom all the time, and there used to be a record store towards the left somewhere. I don't remember what it was called.
By the Mervins?
Yes, by Mervins.
Sam Goody got it.
Was it Sam Goody?
Goody got it. No, I think it was like Blockbuster Music or something.
No. It was a Blockbuster. It was a mall store. And that was the same store that I got my very first CD. was Slayer Show No Mercy, and I bought it there.
Oh. I love that ad.
But the very first Helloween album that I bought there was Keeper of the Seven Keys Part 2.
Nice.
Because they had a huge standee of the pumpkin guy with the albums in there. And I was like, Mom, I've got to hear this.
I don't remember.
And she bought it for me.
I remember. I know which one you're talking because I vaguely remember that store. But then they changed into a Blockbuster Music, right?
Maybe. I don't remember that.
And then, but you know what those were when music stores were music stores. You'd walk in there just... tons of CDs, and in the back, I remember in the very back of that store, they had a glass partition, this weird kind of room you'd enter in, and they kept the classical music in there.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you couldn't
have the classical music associating with the rest of this dirty pop music. I thought that was so funny. It wasn't even like they were like listening booths in there. It was just kind of this glass room that they kept the classical music in. Like, make sure you wear your gloves before you go and touch, you know, Bach and Mozart and stuff. It's like
the dirty porn section of the music store.
I thought that was like the weirdest thing. They're just CDs, guys.
Yeah. So they're doing this full tour, right? And they just announced 5 U.S. dates. Well, U.S. and Canada.
Yeah.
So New York's included. Chicago was included. I think Toronto. And then L.A. and Las Vegas.
Right.
I am this close to buying tickets to Las Vegas show because it's the House of Blues in Las Vegas.
Right.
I am super, super close to buying tickets because I've been to Vegas before and you can get cheap airfare if you plan ahead. And
Southwest flies out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm part of this, you know, last time I stayed there was like 2 or 3 years ago. We stayed at the Luxor and
I remember you had a good time over there.
Yeah, and they keep on sending me these emails. It's like, hey, come back. Get $30 a night hotel room. I'm like, shit, that's really cheap. I could physically or, you know, financially do this. I don't know. It's so tempting.
Yeah. Be a great story for the podcast.
I've seen Halloween once.
Yeah.
Which was freaking amazing in Chicago. I was there visiting my aunt, and it just so happened that Halloween was playing the State Theater.
I think you told me about this. Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'm on my own tonight. I'm going to go see Halloween, and Jack Panther was the opening band.
Now, see, the question is, will Michael Kiske be there? Because I understand that he's having some medical issues.
Yes.
You'd have to confirm
but
that.
But this is September of next year. He should be okay by then.
Oh, yeah, okay. Never mind. Yeah.
He just had something wrong with his vocal cords or something, so they told him to take a little time off.
Yeah. I think he had the same thing that caused the Scorpions to cancel their North American tour.
They told him to take a little time off to fix it.
A little time, yeah.
That song, dude, there's a certain lyric that he does in that song.
Yeah.
He sounds like Elton John. He really does, man.
I love that song.
Yeah, I really do too. Let's move on. We're going to get into a cover song that my wife pointed out to me, which I didn't really realize it was a cover song.
Yeah.
Primal Fear has a new best of album out, and there's three real new tracks, one like sort of like intro track, but it's called The Best of Fear. Their new songs are Predator, If Looks Could Kill, and Thrill of Speed. And apparently, If Looks Could Kill is a heart song.
Yeah.
I thought it was a Motley Crue song at first, but don't they have a Motley Crue song like that?
She's Got the Looks
That Kill. Yeah, that's what I thought it was, but it's not. It's a heart song. She was singing it. I'm like, oh, okay. Big fan of Primal Fear, so anything those guys do.
So this is just a straight up like best of.
Yeah, it's a double disc, you know, collection of.
I gotta say that might be if you're on the fence about it, that might be the place to go on Spotify and check that one out first.
Oh, yeah.
If you're on the fence about or if you've never heard this band, rather, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's some really good songs on here.
You know, they're one of those bands. They have so many albums that it. And I'll be honest, like not a lot of them. Some of them are kind of, you know, inconsistent. I'll say at best. So
yeah, I agree.
They don't really have, in my view, a bona fide classic. So it might be that a compilation is kind of what they needed to.
Because there's really really good tracks on an album, and then there's okay.
In the digital age, what is a compilation but a playlist, right?
Like
unless you actually go and get the physical copy of this, but
if it comes with like a DVD or something with like all their music videos, which is.
Again,
or a live album.
Yeah.
Something that makes it worthwhile. But they do a lot of live albums, too.
It's getting harder and harder for the physical releases to be worthwhile. I mean, as much as we groan about like how we want to support physical releases.
So you know what I started doing last week? I started going through my CD collection. I was like, I have way too many here. I need to get rid of some
stuff.
That's
an understatement.
You know what I've done?
Yeah.
I have a 200-disc, CD case.
The book, what I did.
The book.
Yeah.
So what I started doing is I started with my compilation album. So
All
these tribute albums and stuff like that. I'm like, why do I need these cases? I don't. They're sitting in my closet upstairs.
Exactly.
So I'm sticking them in this book.
Tossing the cases.
Toss the case.
You have a big garbage bag full of the cases.
I did.
Yeah. Those become heavy really quickly.
Yeah, and I'm sure the garbage people are going to love me for this.
Yeah,
this for this project, but it's going to be a slow burn project. But
it took me because it's such a pain to do it all at once.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
It's a pain to get all the plastic
things off.
Yeah.
And are you keeping the back artwork too?
Yeah,
I did that too. And the thing is, like, they make those books so you can't actually fit. All that stuff in.
I had to fold my back.
You had to cram it in there,
yeah,
sort of.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I had to fold the back part in half.
Right.
I mean, it's not that big of a deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's a collection that matters to you pretty much only. So
yeah.
So
I'm gonna probably go through some of my other stuff, and I mean, I have so many CDs of bands. I'm like, do I need to keep all these in their case? You know, it's weird.
I wrote about this on the metalpigeon.com, but like a couple months ago, where I wrote about like how I was minimizing, like how I just finished doing it and I kind of felt weird about it. Like something I used to enjoy doing was collecting physical albums.
I still do. But we were looking,
My thing is I will not buy a jewel case anymore because I have no need for that jewel case.
So we were just talking about that. And I have a stack here of new albums that I've purchased in the past month. So let's go over this real quick. I have the
not new a jewel case in sight.
Not a, which is weird. Not a jewel case in sight, and that wasn't anything planned. So right. I picked up the new Paradise Lost Medusa, nice digipack, almost like a it. It's like the material. It's like biodegradable. It feels like right. you know. It's really yeah. really nice. I bought the new Primus. If you haven't heard, this is called the Desaturating 7. It's a fantasy concept album from Primus. It's very, very interesting. Picked up the new Dead Horse, which is a digipack, the new Enslaved, Glossy digipack, and the new Guar digipack. Not one jewel case in sight.
I'm glad that labels have finally just decided to say, okay, the jewel case, everyone's kind of out on the jewel case.
I think so.
We're out on that. But at the same time, you know, it's...
But it probably costs more to produce these.
It does, but I don't know. I think you're not printing as many of them, you know, probably.
Maybe not. I mean, the new Guar was only $7.99 to buy new at Best Buy
yeah.
in this format. That's cheap as hell.
Yeah, and you wonder why, like, who's sending that? Is it the publisher or is it just Best Buy just going, yeah, we can afford to?
I guess so. I mean, they're still a Metal Blade record, so.
I gotta think that's Metal Blade setting that price.
Yeah, maybe.
That Brian Slagle is probably aware of the fact. In fact, he was just on Twitter about a couple weeks ago, and I talked to him about this very briefly, about how he was like getting rid of all these CDs.
I'm sorry, who?
Brian Slagle.
I think you dropped something again.
I did. It's very easy to reach people on social media.
No, you just have to ask. Yeah.
And
just tag him.
You just, and the thing is, he was talking about getting rid of all these CDs, and I tweeted to him how I wanted a reason to buy physical product again, but it's harder and harder to find that reason.
Mm.
And something has to be really unique and special and cool looking where I really want to have
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And I usually find those experiences at shows. I'm wearing a hoodie right now from Swallow the Sun that mm-hmm. Carrie was right next to me when we did this. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it was.
And it was caught up in the emotion at that time, and I was like, "This show I just saw was so amazing. Yes, I want the shirt and the hoodie."
Right.
And the thing is that, like, I think okay, I feel like I've supported the band financially. You know, like I know I have. I don't physically own any Swallow the Sun albums, though. Like, I know you have the nice triple disc box mm-hmm. set, yes. Songs from the North. I want to get that, but
it's great.
It has to be special like that yeah. for me to want to buy it now. Like, I don't even have I have one CD player. One. It's in my car. I don't have anything to play these things on. Like, so you buy physical releases that have, you know, CDs, and you're kind of like...
That's where okay. I listen to them at in the car, probably. You know, if I'm anywhere... Okay, if I'm at work or if I'm at home, it's usually, truthfully, Spotify now. Because I have one of these Amazon Echo things that I won at a work party last year, and it's hooked up to my Spotify account.
Right.
And we pay for a Spotify account now.
Right.
And I can just sit there, I get ready in the morning, I'm like, what band do I listen to? Hey, Spotify, play Guar, the Blood of Gods on Spotify, and album starts like that. I don't have to.
It's the easiest thing. And the thing is, like, CDs are caught in that really rough spot between, mm-hmm. you know, when you have vinyl, you have an experience. I'm going to take the vinyl out, the tangible feel of it, putting on the player.
I've gotten into vinyl recently. Needle,
and that's what, you know, and I think you getting into vinyl was kind of that thing of, I want to get back into collecting something yeah. physical like that again with music.
Right.
It's harder. I don't have a vinyl player. I don't collect vinyl. So for me, it's like CDs are just kind of gotten to the point of irrelevance, to a point where I wonder, you know, where they include download codes in mm-hmm. when you buy a vinyl?
Yes.
Should they include download codes in
when
the
CDs? When you buy a CD? Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because, and they don't, but the thing is, like, what laptop are you seeing out there on the market that comes with the optical drive anymore?
There's none.
There is none. No. Yeah, it's, you're expected to download games off Steam now.
Right.
Not install them in a disk drive, so... There's no reason for these computers to have optical drives. So what are labels going to do? You know, like when you finally start running out of reasons to make a physical product and it all becomes digital, because it does feel like, even though metal is one of the places that's holding out, it feels like it's inching towards that year by year.
So I will. Yeah, I don't really buy digital music.
I try to buy digital downloads whenever I can.
I'll buy the physical version if, I don't know. It's the same thing with video games as me.
Yeah.
Because if I have to buy it digitally because it's like not available in a physical version, like Cuphead and things like that,
right.
I will. But I want that physical disc. I want that in my collection. I mean, it takes up a lot of fucking room.
Right.
It really does.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And, you know, the thing is, especially with the video games, you go to a GameStop and you realize that, oh, this is only $5 cheaper than the digital version. I could have just stayed home and downloaded.
Right.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, but
I don't know.
You're sort of stuck.
I was telling you about how I went to this major electronics store and I got bummed out by the fact that I just didn't find anything in there that I wanted.
Yeah. Well, and I know which store you're talking about, and there hasn't been anything in there good for a long time.
Well, they used to have this huge CD, DVD section, stuff you could just, like, you know, people like us who like music and movies could go and find stuff, and I walked out of there with nothing, and I felt like a part of my, you know, childhood and teenagedom had just kind of broken. I was like, there are no stores in Houston that I want to go into now. This entire city is kind of like just a bunch of stores, and I wonder, who's going into these stores? Why can't you just order everything off Amazon? Oh, I hate Amazon, you know, but I use it all the time, but I hate it.
You hate Amazon?
It's just this thing of, like, it's sort of replacing all the reasons you have to go to places, you know?
Right. Especially bookstores and things like that, you know?
Even just, like, clothing. You can, like, order anything you want to on Amazon, and it's actually more convenient to do it through internet to get exactly what you want than it is to go look around in stores. And I don't know. It's a love-hate thing. It's not, sometimes you like it, sometimes you hate it, and then you just sort of feel like we're spiraling towards Fahrenheit 451, where they're, like, sitting at home and they're watching their parlor screens, and we're over here, like, glued to Netflix all the time. It's happened.
No, it's definitely happened.
This has gotten dystopian really quick. I just watched Blade Runner the other week, so I'm still caught in that world.
Yeah. That was a great movie.
Oh, that was a great movie.
Why can't
jukeboxes be like that?
I know, right? I'm lost. Did we play Primal Fear already, or are we going to? I think we're about to. We got into like a 20-minute tangent about something. Welcome to the show, my friend. The topics that never end. Let's get into Primal Fear, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Yes, sir. down, cause I'm the biggest dog around. You can't keep me down, cause I'm the biggest dog around. You can't keep me down, cause I'm the biggest dog around. You can't keep me down, cause I'm the baddest dog around. Why would you sing? I would back down.
All right. So some L.A. Guns.
It's right. Some sleaze metal for you right there.
Yeah.
First album in, I think, like 15 years with the vocalist Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns.
Yeah, because Phil Lewis had done L.A. Guns albums on his own, like with his version of the band when they were the two versions, I guess, right? He did the Waking Dead or something was the last one they did, I think. Or
Waking the Dead. But look,
Waking the Dead.
Two more after that,
but those weren't with Tracy Guns. I don't think. Right?
Like, yeah.
That was the Phil Lewis fronted version.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's an interesting cover on that one.
Yeah. Waking the Dead was the last one with Tracy Guns. So 15 years ago,
Steve Riley and Phil Lewis had their version of the band for a while, and Tracy Guns was touring with Tracy Guns, L.A. Guns.
Yeah. They had that
nonsense.
It's like what Rhapsody and Rhapsody of Fire have done and all that.
And Entombed, sort of Entombed. But yeah. It's good that they're back together, you know. If Helloween can do it, Jesus, anyone can do it, you know.
That's right.
So
I'm actually looking forward to seeing them live. They're playing that rooftop bar we talked about, that Proof Place.
Yeah.
It's free tickets, so I'm going to go check it out.
I saw LA Guns in 2000 with Rat, some version of Rat.
Right.
At Numbers, I think. I can't remember. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing, you know.
Yeah.
80s cock rock is still fun.
You know, what I was thinking was because that was a decent song, you know. But you know, then you get to the chorus and it comes back to kind of the 80s rock glam rock type attitude and the lyrics and stuff. I always wondered why like bands like that like that they're still surviving the LA Guns, the Rats and all that other stuff. Why they didn't try to take like a really dramatic turn for the serious, the way kind of like. You know, like the cult came back in 2001 with an album called Beyond Good and Evil, crushingly heavy album, very serious, very arty, very mystical and stuff. And I think that was maybe one of the best cult albums ever, just from an artistic standpoint. And I was always, bummed out that none of the other bands, I'm not comparing cult to them, but I'm just saying none of the other bands from the 80s kind of tried to do that. Everyone just sort of like they got lost in what they were trying to do. I guess since you've been, if you're the band that's singing about, sleazy cars and sleazy women in mm-hmm. the 80s, it's hard to pivot into a more mature direction,
yeah.
or to know what a more mature direction is. You know,
you're singing about tits and ass. That's, you know, in hanging out on the Sunset Strip, that's what you know.
I guess, yeah. But you figure, like, you know, as adults, you grow and you learn different things over time, and maybe you can incorporate that into, like, look at Winger, for example. He wrote 17, you know, like, and that's
a pedophilic song.
That song is as juvenile as you can get, but then he went on and started doing new age music later on in his career, like acoustic bass stuff, and you're like, okay, that's not rock, but he definitely moved on as a musician, you know?
Okay, I did not know that.
So I don't know. I think like when you hear stuff like this, you're like, that's cool that LA Guns is still out there doing it. I applaud them for doing it. I just don't know how excited I can get about it personally, because I kind of feel like is there a lot of conviction in what this is? You know, like when you hear a new Maiden album, you go, you can say, well, this song worked for me and this song didn't, but the entire concept, you can tell there's belief behind it, you know? And it's harder with bands like these, I think, for me, with new music from them.
Sure. I see your point. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Right. I'm not saying it's all across the board. It's just hard. It's metal. You know, metal bands are more serious than hard rock bands like this, naturally. So it's easier to kind of take them seriously. Whereas these guys, you're kind of like, ah, look at these guys, you know?
Yeah, I definitely see your point, man. Yeah. Let's move on. So before LA Guns, we heard something from The Best of Fear, which is the new compilation album from Primal Fear, a cover song from Heart, If Looks Could Kill.
Yeah.
What else can you say about that? It's Primal Fear.
It's a good, great Heart song. So,
yeah.
Heart's one of those bands that gets covered a lot in metal that you don't really think about until you start thinking about, oh, yeah, I guess Advance covered them and Avantasia. Well, no, I don't think Avantasia did, but I know that a lot of like symphonic power metal bands.
Well, Advance covers ABBA a lot too, so.
Yeah.
So that's sort of. I took my wife to see Heart last year with Cheap Trick and I think with Joan Jett. That was a fun show.
Yeah.
It's a good show. You know, it's weird. The older I'm getting, the more I'm also getting into like back into the classic rock and like some of the old prog rock that I never listened to.
Yeah.
Like, I think we talked about, I just saw Deep Purple not that long ago, which was phenomenal, and it was phenomenal. It was great. I don't know. You know, I'm getting into Yes and all these kinds of things that I never thought I would get into.
Right, yeah.
And I think modern prog metal is what's turned me on to some of that stuff, you know what I mean?
Hmm.
Like, especially like Arion and bands of that style where... Like, I want to go, like, Opeth, it's like, I've gone back and want to listen to their influences, what influenced them.
Right, yeah.
And in Arion, it's Kansas and Yes and King Crimson and, you know, all these bands that I just overlooked all the time because I'm like, in Genesis, you know, there's some really cool old Genesis stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. We'll throw you down that road, too.
And you know, a lot of it that has to do with it is Spotify.
Right, it's so easy. Yeah.
If it wasn't for programs like that, it's a lot more difficult to get your hands on this stuff without having to go out and purchase it and waste money on it.
Right.
Now I'm going to be like, you know, I've never heard this album before. I'm going to listen to it.
Yeah.
When Tom Petty died, I'm a huge Tom Petty fan. I love Tom Petty. I spent 2 days going through the whole collection of albums from starting from the beginning, going up to the modern stuff, listening to every single thing. And without the use of programs like that, there's no way I could have done that.
Right, yeah.
And hey, I felt it was a great way to pay respect for one of my favorite rock and roll artists, you know?
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. I went and...
We're still not sponsored by Spotify, so...
I went and listened to like the very first Jefferson Airplane stuff, just out of curiosity of like... I don't know. I kind of led down that tangent one day. But yeah, it's easy to do it now.
Exactly.
Have you gone into your Jethro Tull exploration?
No, I have not done Jethro Tull.
You should do that. You like a lot of that stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like albums like Songs from the Wood are really, really good.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I'll take your word for
it. Big Maiden influence.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe I'll check it out.
Yeah.
You never know. You don't know.
No.
Like LA Guns, I would never heard the new album unless it was for something like that.
Yeah.
It's really changed the way that I've getting into music in the past couple of years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's funny. Like last segment, we were talking about how much we missed physical releases. And now we're talking about how much
I still do. I will still support bands that I love. If a band that I am a big fan of put out a new album, I will go buy that album no matter what.
Yeah.
It's just the way I can support the band, even though they don't get a lot of money from it. I'd rather go see them live and buy a t-shirt, blah, 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 you know, like it's
still. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. That's why I'm so disappointed when tours skip us.
Like Enslaved?
Enslaved.
That a whole Enslaved, with Enslaved, Wolves in the Throne Room.
Mercure.
Mercure and who else? Somebody else. It's for another, the fourth band.
I can't remember.
But it's skipping Texas completely. Even if it was like, okay, I'm going to drive to Dallas to go see the show, I would.
Stop calling it North American tours if you're not going to hit the biggest state on the continental mainland
and
of the United States.
One of the
States.
Biggest cities in the state.
Yeah,
we live in it.
Stop calling it a North American tour. Hit Texas, for God's sake. Like, like, you know, these booking agencies have connections with all these promoters. We have all these venues in Houston. We're, you know, it's not like I know that, I don't know. I know there's sometimes scheduling conflicts and, oh, there's no venues available. Yeah, there is. You can somehow make a venue available in any of these cities.
Yeah.
You know, come to San Antonio. We'll drive there.
Yeah, no doubt, right?
That's fine. I don't want to see that tour anyway. How about that?
Speaking of Houston, let's talk about, we're going to play a local band now.
All right, yeah.
This is a band
we can see.
A band that you can't see. I actually, the last time I saw these guys, the first time I saw them, I've been meaning to see my friend. So I'm like, I haven't seen your band yet. But there was my old co-host of this show, Kryptos, did a benefit show for Harvey victims about a month ago at Rudyard's. And Wolf Skull played, and they handed me a CD. And then I won a CD and a raffle ticket they were doing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this was recorded in summer of 2016. It's David Herrera, who you might know from Imprecation and Adumas from back in the day here, and then a guy named Shane Wilson, who's a friend of mine.
Yeah,
who's been following mainstream resistance since he was like 16, dude. Which is weird.
I think I met him when he was around that age.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. So Wolf Skull, it's in my opinion, in my interpretation of the band, it's mixing the Misfits and the sludgy, down-tuned guitars of, like, Entombed.
Yeah.
You know? It's great stuff, but with heavier vocals. It's not Misfit style, even though Shane does do the whoa backup stuff, you know what I mean? Which you have to have in a Misfit style band.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, these guys play Houston a lot. Check them out. They are... when we come back from the break, we'll have links to some of their social media where you can find them if they have a band camp and all that. They just posted that they're working on putting a cassette out for this album.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. If you're looking for a cassette, it's coming. So the name of the album is called Hellshock, and they're actually also working on brand new music too. But let's get into the song. It's called Deliver Us. This is from Wolf Skull, Wolfskull. Wolfskull.
Wolfskull.
Wolfskull. There you go.
Face all this morning. Yeah.
Oh, God, dude. What the hell was that?
Okay, so that was a band called, and I think I'm saying this right, Kyra. A song called Heart Rage from their album just came out the other week called Letters to Myself. If the guitar sounded familiar to you, that's because they are being played by Jesper Strömstedt, ex In Flames. Also has Peter Ivers, ex In Flames, on bass.
Oh, jeez.
And then the vocalist is the ex-vocalist of Amaranth, Jake E. Berg, who was who left the band after their last album. He kind of just, I guess, the interesting thing about this band is that it kind of tells you a lot about why he left Amaranth.
You sure he wasn't from like some Disney Channel band?
And then kind of why, and then kind of like raises questions about what they're trying to accomplish at the same time. I will say that, full disclosure, I did enjoy myself listening to this album for two reasons. One, because I just like catchy songs. And then two, I missed hearing Jesper play riffs like that. They were like melodic death metal riffs. Because in Dimension Zero, that was just pretty much thrash metal. And he didn't do a lot of the stuff that he did in In Flames. And I missed that.
So you, okay, so this band, Sierra, whatever they're called.
Uh-huh.
So you just said that, okay, is Jesper from In Flames, ex In Flames. You said he was playing death metal style guitar riffing in this song?
No, mellow death. Like the kind of...
well, you're right, that's what I meant, mellow death
stuff. The kind of mellow death stuff that
but
was,
this song was
in Flames.
I'm not on board with your brother.
No, I know.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
And we don't have to agree on this.
Right.
We can just agree to disagree. I do not like this at all. It's too poppy.
Yeah. But you're not a fan of Amaranth at all in this.
No,
slightest.
I'm not. Actually, no.
It makes sense to me that it would sound this way with him as the singer. When they announced this lineup for this band a couple months ago, I was very, like, I couldn't even visualize the sound. Because, I mean, he's not going to do, growling vocals. He's a clean singer. So what it really is just, it's basically like... Jesper left after a Sense of Purpose with In Flames, or no, he left after Sounds of a Playground Fading, that's right. That was his last album with the band, and it kind of just sounds like the In Flames sound from that album with Jesper, with Jake's vocals on it. And it, in that sense, it kind of like, okay, I can see how that makes sense. I will say this, if you've heard the last In Flames album, Battles, and you compare this to that, I think this smokes that stuff. And I'm not saying that it's a direct comparison, but I think that this take on a more modern melodic death metal, it's more appealing and interesting to me just on a musical ear candy front than whatever it is In Flames is trying to do right now. So I can sort of see where Jesper is mentally. Like, he just wants to do something different, but still connected to that style he was playing in Flames, like, modern melodic death metal stuff, Everyone's wish is that he would go back and do like some old classic, late 90s style Gothenburg.
Yeah, definitely.
Melodic death metal, like, from the classic, style. But I kind of think that's not where his head's at. Also, these songs, a lot of them are like lyrically kind of about him, like he's writing the lyrics about like addiction and stuff like that. So it's got that kind of thing going on in the background. I don't know. It's definitely, not going to end up in the album of the year rankings, obviously, but I think it's one of those. I found it an interesting album to listen to, and I was surprised by how much fun I had listening to it. I'll say that.
Okay. I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah.
That's fine, dude. You're welcome.
I'm also a guy who, I like Amaranth.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah.
I know you do. All right, moving on.
The look of abject disappointment on Carrie's face.
Yeah, you like Hatebreed too now, though.
Yeah, I love Hatebreed.
All right. So before that, we heard a band called Wolf Skull from Houston, Texas, the song Deliver Us from their album Hellshock. And we promised that we were going to look up their Bandcamp, which we did not. Let's do that real quick. Talk about your love for this band, Amaranth, real quick.
Well, I don't love Amaranth. I just think that I understand why. I think they write catchy songs. And, I grew up listening to Bon Jovi and stuff like that. So that was my access to rock music and to later hard rock and metal. So it's just part of my DNA. I didn't, you know, my first band wasn't Metallica or Slayer or anything. So I'm always going to like just big, dumb rock and choruses and hooks and ear candy. It's the same reason I like just generic pop music, you know, like Madonna and stuff like that. So that's when you hear stuff like that on the show. Yeah, you're like Power Quest and all that kind of stuff. You're gonna know it's most of it's coming from my direction. Although, you know, sometimes I come with black metal. Sometimes you come with the pop, more poppy stuff. It's a blend. It's a blend on this show.
So you can find them, so Wolf Skull, you can find them on Facebook and Twitter, but looks like fleshvessel666.bandcamp.com is where you can actually get there. It's a, looks like it's a Texas record label and distro.
Hmm.
So there you go. And there's where you can pre-order the cassette as well.
Wow.
Do it.
Cassette.
Yeah, cassette. Let's talk about this other band that we, they sent us their music, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You had a chance to listen to it, right?
Yes.
So there's a band, called Heirs of Isildur. Am I saying that incorrectly
Isildur.
For you? Isildur. Isildur. Which, of course, is a Lord of the Rings reference, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me all about that.
Isildur was the, was the prince of the basically men and elves allied to fight Sauron, the last alliance coming together. Isildur was the son of the Numenorean, I believe, king, or descendant of the Numenorean king, and he was the one who sliced off the ring off Sauron's finger, took the ring for his own, and refused to cast it into the lake of fire like he was commanded. Isildur, cast the ring into the fire! And he didn't, like a jackass. And that's what caused all the problems that faced our hobbit friends and Gandalf.
Well, it sounds like...
Gandalf had a heck of a time, I'll tell you that.
I don't think they might have based the name, but here's the deal on this band, right? So Heirs of Isildur is a cross-media creation that utilizes music, videos, and an illustrated novel comic series to bring their universe to life. The story focuses around Professor Michael Isildur, the artisan and curator at the Father Time Emporium, a timekeeping and clockmaking establishment, and the havoc that ensues for him and his companions when he allows his routine to deviate from the expected path on one single occasion. So it's a multimedia project. The full-length album will be available December 1st, physical copies will be available through their merch portal at heirsofisildur.com at facebook.com/heirsofisildur. Well, I guess we should spell that too, right? Isildur.
These guys know Tolkien. They know how to spell it.
They got to. And looks like it's going to be available on all the digital media formats too, like Spotify
cool.
and all that.
Yeah.
So let's get into this. This is called Crossroads. It's from the upcoming The Crossroads Conundrum. Check it out.
Sometimes it's all bizarre. The sugar, sometimes it's all bizarre. I see the future.
back, my friends, and we just listened to a little-known band. I think maybe a few people have heard of them. They're called Gwar. They have a brand new album out, finally. The Blood of God is the name of the album. Crushed by the Cross is the song we heard. And that song is fucking thrash-tastic.
Yeah, I love that song. That was cool.
It's really... It's a great album. You know, everybody was wondering how they're going to be without Odorous, but...
Right.
You know, with the new vocalist, which is a weird thing. If people think he's brand new to the band, he's not brand new to the band.
He's been in the lineup.
He was previously Beefcake the Mighty.
Okay.
So, he sang probably at least 4 or 5 songs for the band before.
Huh.
So, he's not a brand new guy. Everybody's like, oh my God, he's brand new. He now is known as Blosar the Berserker.
Is that a new character entirely?
Yeah, a brand new character.
Okay.
It's a great album. I can't recommend it enough. Yeah. If you are a Gwar fan, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more punk influenced, a little bit more.
We're listening to the other song I just mentioned that riff sounded like an Entombed AD.
Yeah.
Like dirty kind of black and roll almost.
You mentioned another song if you changed one of the notes a little bit, it would sound like Judas Priest.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can get down with that.
A little more just straight ahead metal Gwar album, it seems like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great album.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
So what did we hear that before that? We heard a band called Heirs of Isildur.
Heirs of Isildur.
Isildur. The Crossroads Conundrum. So we are in our 200th episode. I guess we have to look back on the past and look forward to the future and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, how long have you been on this show now? Do you remember what episode number it was?
I want to say 141 or something. Was it that long ago?
Maybe.
Have we done that many?
Probably.
Or was it 170 something?
No, it's got to be longer than that.
Yeah, it was 140 something. Yeah.
Feels longer though.
Wow, yeah.
No, it's good, man. So I started this show in 2005. It was something that came out. So I guess we need to preface it. I'm sure some people know the story, but I used to do a fanzine back in the day. Started in about 1998. It started off online first in 96. And this is the way infancy of the internet. I learned how to do everything myself. And I decided, hey, I'm going to make this into a print mag. So I came up, of course, with Mainstream Resistance. And that turned into the print zine I did for 5 issues. It's 6 issues, I think. I was working on the last issue, and 2001 happened, September 11th happened. And a lot of the record labels that I dealt with were in New York. So... a lot of the stuff that I had scheduled for ads, and I was ad supported. The only way I could do the magazine to print it was to get ads from some of the labels and stuff like that. And there was no more ads coming in, so it sort of put a stop to that.
All right.
I sort of pittered around. I wrote for some other online, websites for a little while. And the first podcast I ever heard, was a Disney podcast. It was a show called Inside the Magic. And I was like, man, I could sort of take that idea of what a podcast is, which was so fresh and so new. Nobody knew what it was. And I was like, I want to do that for heavy metal. I want to do that. I want to bring back the magazine in sort of an audio format, which is basically what we did.
Right. Yeah.
So, my last assistant editor on Mainstream Resistance was Papa Josh. So I brought it up to him and we looked at it logistically, figured out what we needed to do, got it set up, and we were rolling. The first few episodes were not good. I'll tell you that much.
I remember you guys had a forum on Ultimate Metal.
We did have a forum on Ultimate Metal.
Resistance. I posted there a couple times, I think.
We had World Dane would hang out on that forum. Yeah. And so it was weird to have.
Oh, I loved Ultimate Metal.
Ultimate Metal was amazing. I wish it was still around, dude.
Yeah, dude. There was a time when, like, before Facebook, when That's where, if you wanted to ever talk to a member of a band, that's where you'd go to talk to, like, Orphaned Land.
If you just wanted to talk about metal.
Vinner Sorg and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, just to, yeah, metal, get recommendations and stuff.
But so Josh left at one point because he decided he wanted to take time and work on his record label. So, and his band that he was, right. Spectral Manifest, Spectral. Which was starting to get bigger and better, you know? And of course I didn't, there's no way I felt any kind of animosity towards somebody. I'm not going to hold anybody back.
Right.
What we decided to do, well, I didn't know what to do at that point. I reached out to a fellow podcaster who also had a show on Metal Injection Radio, John Michael. And we sort of, you know, we let's do a test episode, see how we fit together. And we did a test episode, and he became the next co-host of MSRcast. Our talks on our episodes started going very geeky, right, really quickly, because we have a lot of the same stuff in common. And 5 years ago, with him still the co-host of this show, it's basically where Metal Geeks formed out of. It was that need to have a secondary show where we could still talk about heavy metal if we wanted to. But we could talk about video games and comic books and movies and all that good stuff. Eventually, he left the show to pursue other things, and I brought on to MSRcast. The first person that popped in my mind was you, because you are a living encyclopedia of heavy metal knowledge, and I needed you on this show to make me look better. Truthfully, no, I'm joking. And then for Metal Geeks, of course, we brought on Dave, and then George sort of somehow weaseled his way onto the show, and he's never left.
The two perfect guys for that show, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. And you're a fun co-host on that show, too, because you get to geek out on stuff.
I like doing Metal Geeks. Yeah. I get to do so few of them, but I like doing them.
So that's sort of the history of the show. We've been going since 2005. So I think it's September of 2005. So,
and, you know, 2005, that's like freaking pre-Mark Maron doing a podcast. Yeah. I mean, like, I remember, like, he was kind of like the main guy that kind of launched it in the United States.
And Kevin Smith, I think, too.
Yeah, and Kevin Smith. And
they brought the eyes to what a podcast was, and then they sort of, all the celebrity people sort of latched on to it because they realized it was a way for them to get their message across and a way for them to stay relevant and make money.
I think before them, it was only really like Ricky Gervais and stuff.
Yeah.
And then UK.
I met Kevin Smith 2 years ago, and I gave him one of my business cards, right? It was an amazing moment for me. I'm a huge fan. And he's like, "Oh, dude, what is this?" I was like, "Oh, it's my podcast." He's like, "How long have you been podcasting, man?" You know how he talks. And I was like, "I've been actually truthfully podcasting since 2005. He's like, "Holy shit, really?" And he's like, "That actually makes me jealous." I was like, "Dude, I'm never going to anywhere reach your audience ratio." He's like, "But dude, you've been doing it for longer than me. That's something to be proud of." And I was like, I guess he's right, you know?
Dude, longer than freaking him and Mark Maron, yeah.
Yeah, which is cool, you know, but, you know, I like Mark Maron, too. His podcast can be a little...
longer than Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons started in 2007.
Who's that?
Sports guy.
Oh, see,
it's funny, because Mark Maron was just on his show the other week, and it was like, worlds colliding for me, but, yeah. Nerdist started in 2010, so you got to jump on all these guys.
Yeah, that's right. I needed a different topic to make money, but it never happened for me.
Metal, there's no money.
There's no money in metal. Yeah. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But that's our brief history, and I'd like to thank everybody that's, you know, ever been involved with this show. I want to thank, you know, the Metal Pigeon here, Sean. I want to thank John Michael. I want to thank Papa Josh, Crypto's Grim. I want to thank George and Dave and my wife for supporting it for all these years. You know, everybody's ever, you know, reached out to us as a fan.
Everyone who subscribed, man.
Everybody that subscribed. I want to give a special thanks out to our good friend Brian Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
Who started out as just a fan of the show, and now he's become a good friend and a real big supporter and helps out in more ways than I could ever imagine. He's handling a lot of our social media stuff, and it's overwhelming for, like, a one-person thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
Especially with my real-time job being social media, that takes up most of my social media time is my job, truthfully. Right. So it's, and I want to thank, you know, Bill Longa too. He helps out a lot on Metal Geeks a lot too. And anybody that's ever listened to the show, everybody that's recommended it or found a new band through the show, I want to give a big shout out to all the bands that we've ever played and local bands and bands that have supported this show. It means a lot for me to be doing it for this long, even though we haven't been recently, we haven't been doing as many shows that I would like to do, but you know, I still appreciate every single person that reaches out to us and listens to the show.
I like to think that people get excited whenever they see an update for our stream, you know, for our feed come up. Like, all right, it's about time. God damn it, you know.
I would hope so. Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
We like to have fun on the show. We like to have in-depth conversations about metal. There's so many great heavy metal podcasts out there right now, and I'm just happy to be part of it, man.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. I like to think we're also one of the few that really try to focus on music more than anything.
There's a lot of shows out there that do focus on music, but we're all eclectic here. We try to feature a little bit of everything, and I would like to feature more local stuff, more underground stuff. So if you are listening or if you know a band that you want us to play on the show, we played a band that reached out to us.
This episode.
Yeah, in this very episode. So you can send an email to msrcast@gmail.com. Contact us there. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. You can reach out to us through Metal Geeks on all those platforms. You can reach out to my co-host here,
yeah,
the Metal Pigeon, on all those platforms. Reach out to us and you know, let us know what you want to hear, if you want your band played. If more likely than not, we will play it.
Yeah.
Or we'll talk about it, or we'll do something. Sean will probably even fucking review it.
Yeah, and also, you know, if you leave a review on iTunes, we will shout you out on the podcast.
We definitely will. I've had some ideas recently about some contesting we can do through that type of thing, through iTunes reviews, and we'll logistically work that out. I'm looking at an autograph poster from Devin Townsend right here that could be part of that prize package.
You're willing to get rid of that?
I'm willing to get rid of that.
Jeez.
So, yeah.
All right.
There's a lot of cool stuff, man. So thanks for the past 12, coming on 13 years of this show right now, man.
Happy birthday, MSR Cast.
That's right. Happy Metalversary.
Metalversary.
But we do have another band to play before we leave here.
Oh yeah.
Sons of Apollo. Have you listened to this, right?
So here's my thing with this band. Okay. I've heard this name before,
yes,
and I can't place who's in it, but I know it's someone from another major band.
It's yeah, okay, so
this is very obvious to me. It should be obvious, right?
Yeah, so Sons of Apollo, it's a supergroup of all supergroups.
Right.
It's a prog metal supergroup, basically. Of course, Mike Portnoy's the drummer.
Okay.
Dream Theater, you know, this band has a definite Dream Theater vibe to me, for sure.
This is the Bumblefoot band.
Bumblefoot is the lead guitar player in this band. You're right.
Yeah.
And you will hear his style, especially on some of the guitar solos that he does. It's different, I think. It fits what this style of band is. You also have Billy Sheehan on bass. Derek Sherinian on keyboards, and Jeff Scott Soto is a vocalist of this band.
Yeah, I always wondered what that guy was doing. I had no idea he was singing for Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Apparently, yeah, I didn't know
he's
that
one
either.
Of the vocalists in the touring company. Yeah, that's crazy.
And
that's
he just put a solo album out too recently. So,
yeah.
You can. I think Josh over that drummer guy just interviewed him. If you want to check out that current episode, it's pretty good. I really like this album. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. It's not a masterpiece or anything, but it's just a really good prog metal album with different ideas
right
mixed in So let's check it out, and we will see you guys on the next episode. It's been a long time. I've been doing this show. I can't remember how we end it. Something we have to say every time, right?
Keep it geeky. No, that's not it.
Enjoy your burrito. No, that's not it. Oh yeah, I know what it is. Keep it metal.
Keep it metal.
Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah.
For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.